Yeah. Well, welcome to season two of The Job. I think this is episode 33.
Wow.
This is brought to you by Obviously Need More Designs. I am here in the studio. My name is Ray Briglib, and I'm talking to...
Candace Briglib!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wife, business partner, and superstar.
So we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary as a business.
Yeah, it's like this week.
As a web design studio.
Yeah.
That's amazing. We've been doing this for a decade.
We shared this birthday with Gmail, I found out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Facebook hadn't even been discovered.
Invented. It's true. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So much has changed. There was no iPhone. I mean, we were making websites when Flash was
where it was at. We were building websites in Flash that filled a space of 960 by 540 pixels.
Mm-hmm. I just posted an Instagram of you making a score for a Flash website. Remember you used to like make the music?
And, uh-huh.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That I do miss, and it's finally coming back to the web, the ability to add actual music and stuff, but, you know, having started in Flash, I feel like actually it seemed like a curse for a while because we had to stop using Flash when
the iPhone
came out, especially.
Yeah, curse.
But now it seems like a benefit because a lot of the stuff you can do in HTML has gotten to the level of what you could do in Flash or what, mm-hmm. certainly what we used it for. Which was sort of simple transitions and just to give something a little bit of character and feel and personality that was not just like, okay, you're visiting a page, things load when they load, and you click on things that are underlined. It's more like we've always tried to make things that are where you think about every little piece of the...
My biggest frustration with Flash, I loved Flash. I will say that. I love the feel. I love the fact that we could make this like immersive experience. And a lot of the sites we were doing then were for like artists and musicians. But you were always really aware of the box that you were contained in.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it was really hard to break out of that. And it feels like now we're making sites that like, you know, big, gorgeous images take over the full browser. And
no matter what size it is,
yeah,
what device
like
you're
there's
on.
Something.
Yeah.
So much more immersive about what we're doing now. And I remember when the iPhone came out, I thought we were never going to make something as like artistic and immersive and interactive again. And I realize now that we've surpassed, I think, what we were able to do in Flash. It's
so
exciting.
So much of the stuff you see now, it's like you know, you see a design that actually can respond to the tilt of an iPad or iPhone. It's like so much... It's in so many ways, it's gone so far beyond what you could do back then. It's gotten a hell of a lot more complicated.
Yeah, which is
way
exciting.
More complicated. Yeah. And I suppose our studio's grown, and obviously our budgets have too, but at the same time, what we do is so much more ambitious than...
Oh, yeah, we're not making websites for a couple bottles of wine anymore.
Yeah. I remember being excited when we did a website that was a $500 website.
Yeah.
Like, I think I wore a suit.
Yeah.
I think the suit...
I remember that suit.
I think the suit cost about what the website did.
Yeah. I still have good taste in clothes.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. So today on our...
Kicking off season two,
our inaugural podcast, we have Betsy and Will in from Betsy and Aya. Who local Portland jewelry makers, just amazing architectural, beautiful jewelry. They also have a brick and mortar shop, which is how we first came across them.
Yeah.
You remember?
Yeah, it's kind of in Northwest Portland, and I did not realize that's what it was. But yeah, you were going to a meeting, and I just had some time to kill. I was walking around. It was rainy. So I walked into the first shop I saw, and it was cute, and the people there were nice, and they had amazing jewelry, and I was like, you know, it had this sort of look that you liked, so mm-hmm. I picked up some earrings and...
Started a massive collection.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, going, architectural, yeah. It true, and you know,
yeah,
sort just of stunning. Art Deco look. Yeah, it's yeah. really nice.
So, you know, let's hear from Betsy and Will.
Hi, Betsy and Will.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi. Thanks for coming down to Needmore.
Our
Thank
pleasure.
Thank you.
Oh, these notifications are on. Okay, that's fine. We're gonna roll. We're gonna do this.
Okay.
So, did you guys start the company in 2008? Was this together?
No.
Okay. Tell me that story.
Okay.
She had the good idea.
Yeah, I actually, I was sort of at a crossroads in my life. I had just finished graduate school for theater. And physical and ensemble-based theater is actually what I went to school for.
Wow.
And I had sort of tried to make my way in that field in Portland, and it just wasn't what I wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any money, and I was like, I gotta do something with my life that's gonna where I can actually make a living. And so I decided to start a creative business. It happened. I was in a coffee shop, and I wrote down kind of like all of the principles of my life. What, you know, what had to be true for me to continue doing theater, and what had to be true for me to be able to make the kind of life that I wanted to make. And I wrote down in that book somewhere that I knew how to make jewelry, kind of.
Right.
And I thought, Will and I were dating at the time, and he had a good job ish. And I said, what do you think about this? And everybody was pretty skeptical, actually. Especially my family back East. And anyways, kind of went down a road there. I decided to do it. I rented a studio for a month, and I basically, all I did was make stuff and I made 7 collections. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just, you know, I just decided if I'm going to do this, I have to go full on, full in. I had like maybe $1,000 in my bank account. Mm-hmm. And I just, I was used to living off of little. So I just kind of, so then I decided an end date. This is going to be my studio open date. I went around to all kinds of shops that I admired around the city and gave them a little postcard saying I was opening and I wanted to sell my work wholesale. And no one came from, you know, none of the shops came, but a ton of people came, and I made back my very modest startup costs in the first weekend. So I knew, to me, that was the sign, like, okay, the universe is saying this is going to happen for me right now.
So that's how it started. Bootstrap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Yeah. And how long between then and when you got the, you know, it seems like now you have a storefront, and mm-hmm. you're, you know, how long was it that you were working out of the studio?
I worked in the first 125 square foot studio for 2 years. Does that sound right?
Well, that was 2008, and then we moved into the retail space in 2011. So there was a studio in between, but
okay,
yeah, just kind of upgraded from 125 to 300 in the middle there. But yeah, that was Will joined me in 2010. So
okay. Well, what was your background?
I actually, we met in college, and we were both studying theater there. So that was kind of where I started. I came out to the West Coast, kind of burnt out on theater, and thought maybe the Portland theater scene would, like, rev me up again. And it was a lost cause. I was like, you know, I was done.
Uh-huh.
My background then was like I found a, you know, I got a temp job at a title insurance company.
Okay.
Kind of worked my way up there, and ended as a business systems analyst on a regional team. I could go more into that if you're interested.
He's a spreadsheet whiz.
Okay. Okay. Which is good because I understand you don't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not so much. Yeah.
That's not my thing.
So When did you, what was the moment where you decided to do that? Was it like frustration with the job you had at some point just reached a boiling point? Or was it just like, this looks so much more interesting?
To jump onto Betsy and I?
Yeah.
It was, we actually had a conversation with a friend of mine, or friend of ours, who I worked with in Vermont. And she had since written a book called The Handmade Marketplace. Her name is Carrie Chapin. And she had come out to promote the book, and you know, and we were hanging out, and so it wasn't. I was definitely not satisfied or fulfilled with the job, but I wasn't like boiling over. Like, it wasn't like, you know, like throwing paper and you know, like
flipping desks.
Right. Yeah. But you know, I told her, you know, I don't know if this is, you know, what I want to be doing, and she was like, well, why aren't you working with Betsy? And we're like, well, that's impossible. You know, like, yeah, we can't afford to do that. And she was like, are you sure? You know, and so it was kind of that challenge of like, are you really sure you can't afford it? Because as I look at Betsy's business, this is Carrie talking, mm-hmm. You know, it's growing, and there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to happen with a growing business. So then we kind of had like a, you know,
freak
a several,
out.
Yeah, like, is this possible? Yeah.
Big freak outs, but also like, yeah, we can honestly kind of the feeling of every, whether it be a huge decision in the business, you know, anywhere from starting the actual business to hiring employees, you know, it felt the same way to me. It's kind of that, like, you can line up everything that you can possibly line up, but in the end, you have to just kind of, you know, break through mm-hmm. and take a chance.
Yeah.
And so we decided we were going to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you started out, it was more you're doing Etsy to kind of sell?
Sure. Etsy was a part of it.
Yeah.
Etsy has never been a huge part of it.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's been a great little steady thing that has contributed to the business, to the success of the business. But when I started, my main focus was selling to shops.
Okay.
So that's really where the bread and butter was coming from.
Okay. Do you still have an Etsy shop?
We do.
And an online shop,
yes,
on your website.
Mm-hmm.
Is it weird still having Etsy? Is there like a place for that still going forward? Do you feel like you're starting to outgrow that?
I don't speak this one.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm assuming Etsy takes a larger share of your sales than the online shop itself.
Percentage. Yeah.
Actually, not true.
Huh.
No, it does.
Oh, yes, it does. Yes, you're right. Sorry.
See, this is why.
What a great
now
team.
It's all very clear.
Okay. Right. Yeah, no, Etsy takes a little bit more. I mean, there's marketplaces out there that take even more than Etsy. Amazon's,
yeah,
marketplace. We haven't tried it, but I think I heard from friends of ours who are on it, it's like 10 or 15%, which,
okay,
is, so that's huge.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
You know, and in any marketplace, you're paying for the exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think actually Etsy's still pretty affordable for what the,
yeah,
exposure is. That said, anybody can go on to Etsy and take a look at the jewelry category and know pretty quickly that it's really saturated.
Yeah.
So I think the exposure that we get from Etsy is commensurate with, you know, with what we pay.
Gotcha.
You know, we, the only sort of liability for us with Etsy is just the time it takes to maintain two shops. But other than that, once you've set up your products, it kind of runs itself.
Yeah.
At least because of the other sort of back end stuff that we have in place. So we've, tell me if this is not interesting, but
no, go ahead. Yeah.
We have we use a software as service called Stitch Labs, and also another one called ShipStation. And
oh,
both,
sure, I've used that.
Yeah, and so they all integrate our other online store with our inventory with Etsy. So when something sells on Etsy, the magic of these integrations relists it, you know, and then. So we really go to one place to kind,
yeah,
of pull our,
okay,
orders. So it's a little bit of an initial time to set the products up on Etsy.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it just kind of runs itself. And, you know, the other reason, like, we wouldn't walk away from Etsy, I don't think any time in the near or distant future, is we have a ton of sales, you know.
Yeah.
And we have a ton of reviews and feedback. And that's, you know, that doesn't come easily.
Right,
so
right.
I think it's important to kind of, you know, to keep going that way. And some people just prefer to order through Etsy,
mm-hmm,
for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's what they do.
Right. At your brick and mortar store, we'll call it, because that's what people call it now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you decide what other designs to carry or what other designers?
Mm. Well, It's really kind of all over the board. So when Will joined me, we went on, it was his idea to go on a road trip across the country to meet shops that we thought might be good fits for our jewelry. Okay. So just through that experience and getting to know those shop owners and the kind of products that they sold and what, you know, looks nice alongside Betsy and Aya jewelry, we just started kind of, you know, absorbing that information. And so when we started the shop, which was also not very well thought out. I mean, it has worked out for us.
It was spontaneous.
It was spontaneous, yeah. I shouldn't say that, but it really was spontaneous. It happened within just a couple of months that we had the opportunity and decided to go for it. But so really when we started the shop, we kind of pulled from all of that information in the shops that had our stuff. And that's where we got a lot of our ideas, all outside of Portland shops. And then also we sort of have some rules, one of which is either made in the USA or made at least by the designer or near where the designer designs. Mm. So as long as we're sort of sticking by that, those principles and values, that's sort of where we start. And, you know, when we follow that, we tend to find the things that, you know, that fit into our aesthetic, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's honestly online research, blogs, lots of people reach out to us now that they know that we have a shop. So we mm-hmm. get a ton of, you know, probably like 10 a week from, okay. maybe, that might be exaggerating, but from people who are interested in selling
okay.
to us. So.
And you are in the midst of an expansion right now, is that? Mm-hmm.
We are.
At the current location, just mm-hmm. bigger?
Yeah. We were lucky to find landlords who had extra space and wanted us to use it if we ever needed it.
Mm-hmm.
They're photographers, so they have a big studio in our building.
Oh, okay.
And or they had a big studio. Now they have a medium-sized studio. So okay. we're expanding production and office into what used to be their space.
Okay.
And the store will actually stay the same size.
Okay.
But we built our production space right now, the one that we're currently operating out of, for two full-time and one part-time person. And we now have four full-time and three part-time. So we built it for kind of 2.5, and now we have like 5.5 people in that space.
Yeah, I can relate to that. Our space was pretty small before this. Which yeah. is why this one seems really large, but we're
yeah, it does.
Obviously
it's nice.
Thinking ahead.
Yeah.
So tell me what a day in the life of your business is like. And this can include any working from home that you guys do okay. or any... driving around town getting coffee. I'm curious.
Well, all we do.
It's about 6 hours of driving around town getting coffee.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it can really vary. We now have a team of, what are we at? 10 or 11 folks working for us.
11.
Yeah, or including us. But that still means there's a lot of hats that everybody wears, including of course us. So. I'll say an average day for me would be anything, you know, correspondence I take up most of the wholesale account maintenance and that kind of stuff. So correspondence, customer service online, driving around town, picking up jewelry making supplies, getting new
oxygen tanks.
Yeah.
For our torches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For our torches. You know, going to the hardware store, anything like that. Snuggling with the dogs. probably running some reports, trying to pull together information do some spreadsheet magic to get information in the right format that will help us make decisions about what products are doing well or what how much we should pay our employees or, you know, whether we can... you know, what sort of 401k we can set up for them, that kind of stuff. It would be how I spend a lot of my days.
And I think I do the same kind of bits and pieces of kind of the boring stuff, but, you know, it's not necessarily boring. but we also do a lot of brainstorming. I mean, we have weekly all staff meetings where we kind of check in on all the things that are happening. And that's been a real important thing for our business and our growth. And then we also have a separate weekly meeting with our people, kind of like the social media strategist, for example, just check in on our the project ideas and kind of how to we can keep pushing them forward. And then Will and I try to meet on a weekly basis on the real big picture things, you know, anything from how things we need to touch on it with the expansion to big ideas that no one knows about yet. So that's something that is important, I think, to sort of keep the energy going up. And then I personally, it's hard, but I try to find good time to and quiet time to design. If you know anything from just reading and kind of flipping through images and getting, you know, getting inspired to actually drawing and then just getting my hands dirty in the studio. Right now, it's tough because we have grown ourselves out of our having space in the studio for me. Mm-hmm. I don't have a bench anymore because we need those benches for everybody to be able to help make the jewelry. Mm-hmm. So with the new space, I'll have a dedicated bench again where I can just do this more, which is you know, kind of what I'm dreaming about right now. Mm-hmm. And then I had another thought that I wanted to tell you. And I like to help make every once in a while. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the beginning I was doing everything on my own, and some things I'm really good at, and some things, like we've already covered, spreadsheets and things and books, I'm not so good at. But I made it work. But it's important to me to be still a part of that process. Mm-hmm. So I try to get in there a little bit every week, even if it's just a couple of hours to help it chug along.
Okay. On the subject of your team meetings, I noticed that you sometimes watch TED Talks. Is that true?
Yes.
It is.
I'm guessing an Apple TV. But yeah. What kind of talks do you usually do, and do you guys find them? Is it something you're looking at night and thinking, we got to show this to the team on Monday, or how do you find those?
We started exactly that way.
Okay.
Yeah, that was how the inspiration behind it. The one we started with was Power Poses. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but
it's so good.
No, but I will. Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes.
Check it out. Yeah. Okay. I can't remember the researcher, but the quick thing was she had like a terrible accident, actually, where she, I think, was cognitively impaired. Mm-hmm. But her research took her in this direction of what is the effect of confidence on people's behavior. And so she had done this study where she just told people take a big, what she started calling power poses, like your hands up in the air or your hands on your hips or like taking up space. For 2 minutes, and then do this test, I think, you know, something. And the performance of, you know, people who did those poses versus really closed off poses or poses that, you know, were not powerful, there was performance differences. So we're like, we have to share this with our team. This is incredible.
Uh-huh.
So that's where it started. And then we just sort of do a round robin now where alphabetically a new teammate brings in doesn't have to be a TED Talk, but a video that's inspiring to them.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that happens every...
Do you have a time limit on that? Is it like a 15-minute time limit?
Or? Well, fortunately, yeah. TED doesn't go... I think it's 18 and a half minutes or something. Yeah. So, yeah, fortunately, we kind of top it out there.
Yeah, okay. You mentioned sort of falling in love with this gentleman in Greece.
You're killing me. This is awesome.
This is acceptable stalking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I do say that. All right. I've exposed myself entirely on our website. This is not weird.
How long ago was that? And do you get to do those kinds of trips often?
That was in college.
Okay.
So that was,
it was over 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you mean inspiring trips?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a part of school. So, you know, that's kind of separate. But we try to, and especially now with how busy we are and stressful the job can be, as I'm sure you understand, we try to get away once a year. And so this year, we're going to Peru in May to my sister's husband actually is from Peru, so we're going to visit his family. Okay. And sort of explore the area there. And I certainly know that I will gather so much inspiration for new designs and things there. So I kind of have a plan with that. But it's not something that we say, okay, this year we have to go here, this year we have to go here. It's more a matter of like release, you know, going somewhere mm-hmm. to just get away from it all. But yeah, travel is a huge part of what inspires me, at least in the designs that I make.
Mm-hmm. So. I noticed that you have on the bios of the whole team, they say where they want to go. Do you feel like that's sort of a part of the whole company culture, the idea of travel or getting inspiration from that kind of thing?
I think it's important to us that folks are happy. I mean, I hope that's the case for a lot of employers, but I wouldn't say it's part of the, like, that travel specifically is part of the company culture. But I do think that as much as we're able to, sort of encouraging and supporting where people's inspiration comes from is mm-hmm. important to us. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we have one of our makers is an actor. So he basically has two full-time jobs. He's in a lot of work around town and works for us in the morning full-time, like comes in at 7 and leaves at, you know, 3 or 4, has a few hours off, and then goes into rehearsals at night and then performances. And he gets a lot of inspiration and a lot of energy and fulfillment from that, and he tells us from his job with us as well. But, you know, so it's important to us to make a company that is flexible where it's able to support this guy's name is Matthew, mm-hmm. to support Matthew to, you know, to do other things that he gets fulfillment from.
Is this the gentleman in the handsome suit?
Okay.
It is.
He's awesome. Yeah. But yeah, I think I want to just piggyback on that. I think that is, it is more of a broader sense of encouraging everybody to find the things in their lives that, you know, bring them joy.
Mm-hmm.
And not just within the business, but how those things sort of relate to each other too.
Mm-hmm. And if they could really just minimize trips to Greece, you know, we've got a lot of work to do.
Right.
Trying to find people who hate traveling.
So you have said that you guys, you know, and maybe this is something I experienced too. Sometimes I feel like I don't mean it's in a bad sense, but I feel like I'm always working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's quite possible that I'll get my best ideas at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. or just, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. at random times. It's probably
middle
because
of
my
the night,
kids
maybe?
Are asleep. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And there's no screaming, but how does that work for you guys? How do you capture those ideas? And you know, do you ever feel like you just can't ever get away from work and that you're just overwhelmed?
Yeah. Well, Betsy gets most of her good ideas in the shower.
Okay.
It's true. I mean, there was a time when I would get out of the shower and be like, "Well, come here. I need to get this off my chest now." You know.
Yeah. We do work a lot, but we also take... I was going to say we take all weekends off, and that's not true, but we... At least that's what
some
we...
Some of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we expect of ourselves to take weekends off. So if mm-hmm. we find ourselves, like, working on a weekend, we know that we're breaking the rules,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So that, I think, is a good sort of foundation that we've put into place.
And I would also say baby steps. I mean, there was definitely a time when we were not taking any days off at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, literally going into work every day. And so I think... It wasn't like a, you know, 3 years doing that and then, okay, we're done. Now we get 2 days off in a row. It took a while to get to that point. And there are times when we have to sacrifice, you know, and kind of go backwards a little bit. You know, like holidays, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But we really try to stick to the rules, like Will said. And we also try to, when we're done working at, say, in the evening, we can kind of have a mutual understanding or decision where it's, you know, we're going to work later tonight. But when we're done working, we're done working. And we're going to play a game or we're going to watch, you know, I don't know, what do we like to watch? Breaking Bad or something like that, you know, and just let it go. And I think we've gotten so much better at that, sort of leaving it when we've decided to leave it, you know, and then also accepting it if we're going to work longer. But yeah, you were asking about ideas specifically when we get ideas. Yeah, so the shower for me, I think it's random. And also just I try to make sure I write down everything. Sometimes I'll get it, you know, in the most random moment I'll get an idea. And if I have a notebook with me or just my phone, I just jot it down. And that way I don't have to feel like, I'm going to lose this one. Mm-hmm. So then I can always access that.
I feel like there's always sort of a tension. It's like on one hand, if you're not always feeling like you want to think about work or you're inspired by it, then you're not, your business is going to kind of atrophy because maybe that's a sign that your passion isn't there. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, it's like if you're never not thinking about the business, you're just going to get burned out. So I can relate to that too. Over the years, we've gotten better, Candace and I, about not doing that. And, you know, part of it was, you know, once you have kids, you just cannot think about the business certain times of the day. Right. So it's kind of forces your hand. But on the other hand, like, you know, I feel like if I didn't think about work sometime in the evening, then I wouldn't be ready for the next day. It's almost part of my routine is that in the evening I have to have some sort of inspiration come to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's important to find those, to try to curate for yourself, the opportunity for inspiration to strike and also the opportunity to not overwork yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, like you can't force yourself to be inspired, but if you can give yourself the time that you know that inspiration or like enjoyment or fulfillment is likely to occur, then I feel like that's part of the challenge of that. And maybe having kids helps or it's, I don't know.
We're not there yet.
Yeah.
But we want to be.
I don't know if it has.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about the Little Boxes promotion. Because I read about that and I was fascinated. I thought, that is a brilliant idea, but I want to hear how it came about and how it worked out.
Yeah. You want me to talk?
I'll talk about how it came about and then you take it from there.
Okay.
It was our first year in the shop. So just a couple months after we had officially opened the shop in August, November rolled around, and this was one of those times to go back where we did not take any days off from the month of June when we decided to sign the lease to, you know, here we are in the holiday season. And I got sick, so it wasn't anything major, but it was enough to keep me at home, and that was the first days I had off in, you know, in months. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of let myself veg out, and I watched TV, and a commercial came on that it was for the first time ever we're going to be open all through the night. And I just, instead of seeing that and thinking like, wow, that's cool, I thought, this is insane. You know, who wants to shop really in the middle of the night? And at least it made me really appreciate the differences between our kinds of shops and the bigger ones. And so I started thinking before Will came home that day, what can we do, you know, to sort of celebrate those shops and that difference? And so I said to Will, you know, I have this idea. I think, was the raffle my idea?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. you know. But an idea to come together, you know, all of our shops and see if we could, you know, pull our money and somehow get the same kind of attention about what we could do for Black Friday out there. Mm-hmm. So anyways, he came home and I said, what do you think? And really, I thought I was sick and that it was just crazy. This is the first week of November.
Right.
Black Friday is, as you know.
Weeks after that?
Yes.
Yeah. This week.
Yeah.
So he came home and thought it was a great idea. And then he got on the computer and started writing all of our colleagues and, you know, peers in the business. And just to see if they'd be on board, and they were. So you can talk more about it now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the inspiration. That's what started it. What else were you curious about?
Well, how did it turn out? I mean, you did it in 2012, was it?
We started in 2012.
Okay.
No, 2011.
Oh, yeah.
2011, okay.
2011, 2012, and then, yeah, 2013. We've done it 3 years in a row. We're planning on even more to happen this year. It, you know, that from a numbers standpoint, it grew from 90 shops the first year to 170 shops the second year to almost, or I think we're at 199 shops the third year. So, you know, it's growing. We're, you know, I feel like we hear things like in our shop, customers will come in and say like, this is our new like Thanksgiving tradition, you know? And so that I feel like is probably the best way to speak to how it turned out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are Portlanders out there now who maybe did shop big box stores or maybe always kind of stayed at home and like played cards or something, but that are now making a tradition of exploring the shopping that, you know, the local independent specialty retailers mm-hmm. that Portland offers. We should also maybe back up and say what the promotion is, because sure. I think we didn't.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's an event that takes place on Black Friday and Saturday after Thanksgiving. That incentivizes just exploration of Portland shops, and the way we do that is through a prize raffle that you can enter just by going into the shops. So there's 200 shops. We this year had an iPhone app that would help you kind of navigate and claim your raffle entries. But you can enter to win prizes like a $2,000 trip, an iPad, and then like just tons of gift certificates and goodies from the shops that participate in Portland restaurants and stuff like that. So you enter just by going in. We mm-hmm. thought we just want people to come in and, mm-hmm. you know, once they walk through the door, it's our job to make them feel welcome and, you know, help them find something that they're looking for. So the promotion is structured to get people in the door. Thereafter, we thought, well, it's also kind of great if they want to spend money. So the second year, we incentivized it where if you made a purchase, you could earn bonus entries into the raffle. Mm. So that's kind of the thrust of it.
It seems like it's the genius of it is just counteracting the publicity blitz. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like. Otherwise, it's hard to picture, you know, a news outlet, even in Portland, covering a small business on Black Friday because they want the big story. They're staying open for 72 hours, you know. Yeah. It's like, well, you know what? A little mom-and-pop shop can't do that.
Exactly.
You know, but yeah. it does give something to write about, a story.
It mm-hmm. does. And it also gives, like... Our thought was like we as shoppers don't want to go to a shop that's open at 2 a.m. You know, like we
feel that sounds bad. Horrible.
We'd rather be sleeping or, I mean, you know, partying, like anything yeah, other yeah. than shopping
right.
at that hour. And so I feel like the other thing that it does is helps give people that are, you know, are like us, our customers, you know, people that would kind of prioritize like a good walk around a neighborhood with their friends and family as opposed to like a, you know, a crazy rush hour waiting in line that would enjoy, it gives them a way to, you know, something, a new tradition, something mm-hmm. to do. So I think that's another important thing about it.
Have you guys ever heard of Cards Against Humanity?
Yes.
You hear about their Black Friday promotion where they actually raised the price?
No.
Really?
That's hilarious. It sold pretty well. They're just like...
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really
so
cool.
So funny.
Okay. So tell me about the Bridge Collection.
Mm. Okay. So Well, as I mentioned, when Will came on, he had this awesome idea.
You should say what it is first.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, I never...
he keeps me in line.
Well, I know that you'll start talking about, like, the inspiration and what did it and all of that, and then you'll end with what
we
it is.
We are a team.
So you should say.
He needs to have, like, flashcards ready and just pass them to me. The Bridge Collection is probably one of our most popular collections. Based on bridges, not just in Portland, but around the country, inspired by travel. And for example, we have the Fremont Bridge Cuff, Brooklyn Bridge Cuff, St. John's Bridge Cuff, and Golden Gate Bridge Cuff, and they're all not so, you know, overtly designed from the bridges, but they have bits that people can recognize as part of that particular bridge. So I wanted a way to make something that felt personal to people that they could have a connection with, but that wasn't too, you know, I don't know, cheesy.
We always say like not a Livestrong bracelet, where it's like you're advertising like exactly what your identity is
right
when you wear it, but yeah. but it's just a little more subtle and to yourself.
Exactly. Or like a piece of, you know, there are lots of things out there, like a plate that says I love you, or, you know, things like that. So something that kind of can give you that same sort of feeling, but felt a little bit more interesting. And so to us, this is what I was going to start with, you know, Will's idea to go across the country and actually meet, like go to these shops and meet these shop owners, was an awesome experience for us. And I think just the traveling, I've always, as mentioned already, travel is a huge part of what inspires me to design. Mm-hmm. And we got to, you know, Will, we live over the St. John's Bridge, so every day we get to see that bridge. And then just the movement in general, like connecting communities, that all of that, those sort of ideas were in my head. And
well, and also that people just love bridges.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's what I was that's what I was about to say. That is a connection, you know, that people can immediately have, and I have it, we have it. So just kind of started drawing, and then Will and I bumped heads on how to execute, and it became huge, and it's still huge for us.
Mm-hmm. You found out a while back that the Fremont cuff was being ripped off.
Mm-hmm. Well, our lawyer tells us to say we believe that it may have been ripped off.
Okay, we'll use that wording. Yes, very diplomatic. Yeah. So, the suspect in this case, how should people in a similar situation in your mind treat that sort of thing? Because that can happen to anyone. I certainly have known other artists who've seen the exact same thing with other suspected big corporations, you know. How do you handle that sort of thing? What's the right reaction?
Well, I think our reaction was the right reaction.
For us. No, certainly.
I'm saying that jokingly, but like we really struggled with that. And I guess, you know, I know that's kind of the gist of your question is like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. So for us in this situation, you know, we kind of went down a bunch of different paths. Like, you know, should we copyright it? 'Cause it wasn't copyrighted. And then if we do that, how do we protect it? How do you even copyright something? Can you copyright a design of this nature? So we had those meetings and we got a ballpark of how much time and energy and money that would cost. Mm-hmm. And then what even if you did all of those things, like what sort of recourse you would have at the end of that day. Mm-hmm. And for us, that like cost benefit didn't add up. Mm-hmm. It was months and thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. And then, you know, you could collect damages from the point at which your copyright was filed if you could prove that they had damaged it. Right? So, you know, so then you'd have to like subpoena their books and see. I mean, it's like crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
To actually prove that. So for us, like, we realized like the negative effect of this on us is that it felt like a violation. It was more emotional, like, because we couldn't even prove that there was a financial damage.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, the decision, like the calculus was, well, how do we take back that feeling of feeling violated? Like, how do we flip the equation? Mm-hmm. And that's how we tackled it, was with that goal in mind.
Yeah. And I would also just say, without losing time, I think, you know, you mentioned the money and just the time it would take to wait. But what I started seeing was, okay, here is my life. Here are my days, my 24 hours. We got some amazing quote out there, you know, we all have the same 24 hours. So what are we going to do with those? And I can't, you know, replace that. The time that I'm going to spend on worrying about that and, you know, seeking action against it is taking away from time I need desperately to be inspired in design and to run our own business and, you know, continue to grow that. So that was a huge part of it for us too. But you said it really well, to flip that and turn it into something good.
So we just celebrated the what we feel like our product means, which is creating jobs, you know, providing pieces that people feel good about wearing. There's a whole blog post on it. But just to kind of celebrate the virtues of what it means when you buy our cuff as opposed to this other cuff. And so to do that, we stamped three of them with the word original on the inside and then numbered them. So they were limited edition run of three that we gold plated in heavy gold plate. And we raffled those off. So we had we sold raffle tickets. And the raffle ticket got you a discount to our shop even if you didn't win. So we felt like it was a way to say thank you. And what it ended up being was a way for people, you know, it was a way that we could understand that we aren't crazy, that that people do have our backs, like our customers really do believe in us. So it was a way that we were able to hear that back from them in their comments and in their the number of times it was shared and liked and retweeted and all of that.
Massive outpouring.
Yeah. So it was really, that was like once we started seeing those comments and, you know, seeing that people were buying raffle tickets like five at a time just to say, I support what you guys are doing. Like that flipped it. You know, all of the worry and the anxiety and all of that.
It was gone.
Went away. And that for us, that was the victory.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like, you know, that stuff is going to happen in life, and it's like your reaction, you want it to be a positive one that moves things forward and has, you know, it's like you don't want to focus on the negative aspects too much or it kind of just brings you down. And yeah, you really do only have so many hours in the day. Okay, maybe on a lighter subject here, because I think probably a lot of that outpouring has to do with a lot of people can relate to that, you know? Like, a lot of people have been in that situation in their life, whether they are designers or artists or...
Absolutely.
You know, so much of what we do is creative, and people will steal, I mean...
Yeah.
Of the wrong kind of stealing. I mean, there's a good kind, you know, like... Yeah.
Right.
So, Betsy, how would you describe your design style?
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, I named the business after how I feel about my designs, which is there's a real perpendicularity there.
Okay.
There's a simple classicness that is butted up against a crazy, a kind of wild abandon. And, that's the best way I've ever felt I can describe what I do.
Okay.
And I really, you have something to add to that?
I'm sure I do. Yeah.
honestly, I think I try not to decide that I am a minimalist designer. I am, you know, just classic or whatever. I try to just actually follow the work. And see where it wants to take me. But I always like for the work to surprise me. So it's hard for me to actually pin a, you know, an umbrella over what my design style is. But it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also like related to that perpendicularity, like Betsy is simultaneously like a perfectionist and a real like, you know, sloppy is not the right word, but there's, I'm trying to think of the
you
kind
can call me
way.
Sloppy.
For me, like, for instance, though, like the one of the rings you're wearing, like I saw a sketch of that, and if I had, this is the Puebla ring,
okay,
this one in the middle.
So I saw a sketch of that, and if I was like tasked with creating the three-dimensional prototype of it. It would be like, I would like throw every one of them out until it was perfectly symmetrical and, you know, had no pits or divots or scratches. And so like where I think Betsy's genius lies is that she sometimes it will be exactly what I described in like this perfect symmetrical thing. And sometimes it is like, she's like, great, it's done now. And you can look at it. It's not perfectly symmetrical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has this, it has, you know, it has these imperfections. So I think to speak to that sort of that, it is that abandon with that perfectionism. You know, even this necklace that you have on, like it, you know, it's like there's, you can see that there is a, there are hands that touched it, but you can also see it was really deliberate and specific. And if you look at the fact that now we, you know, produce these on a, you know, a medium scale, like, everyone turns out more or less the same too. So it's about replicating that sort of abandon precisely.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. It's like perfectly serendipitous.
Yes, that's it.
Okay, well, what's next? You guys opening a shop in Brooklyn or something? You want any reveals on the podcast today?
Oh, man. We're not opening a shop in Brooklyn.
You're like, shit, that's exactly.
Yeah, oh, not anymore, right?
The lawyer said not to talk about it.
Yeah. We have plans to... Well, one thing that we are working on is a fine jewelry collection.
And that is something no one knows yet, so there you go.
Hey, the scoop.
Yeah. You know, one of the angles that we've always taken is wanting to put... real value into the design and the way that we think about things and the way that we produce them and put them out into the world, but to keep them as affordable as we possibly can with those things in mind. So one thing recently that that we've gotten excited about is offering more of a fine collection that still has the edge of design that we offer, but you know, it gives an opportunity for people to buy engagement rings and, you know, just the fancier things. If you have the money to spend and you want to go there and you like our style, because more, and the reason why it's come up is we've gotten more and more requests for custom jewelry design in that higher price range. Mm-hmm. So it won't be, you know, a diversion from, what you expect from Betsy and I. It's going to be an add-on, you know, another type of collection. So,
excellent.
Yeah.
Cool.
You heard it here first.
Right, right. Okay, well, Betsy and Will, thanks so much for talking to
us. Thank you so
much. It was
our
pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
It's good if you end with, let's hear from Betsy and Will, or let's talk to Betsy and Will.
Okay.
Because then they'll just be like, some sort of chime.
No, they'll be the Budos band. How could you take away the Budos band? That makes me so mad. It's the Budos band. You got them to say yes to you, actually.
Are you really upset about that?
I'm so upset.
I just feel like it's so heavy to start the show with this same...
It doesn't have to be that long, though.
Yeah, but it ends up being this big thing. And then, like, you say that, but then it's like you're expecting more of the song to play after the intro. So then there's two pieces I have to edit in between all of it, and then possibly a third or fourth one. Like last season, it ended up I had to edit in three vocal parts, four
okay,
music
parts.
Okay,
let's get on with the talking part.
Okay.
Are we doing that?
Yeah.
Oh, hi.